You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM Montreal.
You're listening to CJLO News. The National English Leadership Debate took place in CBC Radio Canada in Montreal earlier this April. CJLO News was at the debate and behind the scenes. CJLO spoke with people gathered outside of the building supporting different parties about their perspectives.
I'm voting for Mr. Poilievre. I think the choice is really obvious because though Carney tries to say and implement in people's mind that he's been here for a month, it's hard to forget that he's been Trudeau's economic advisor for the last years. So everything we have going on currently with our economy that's wrong, the inflation, he's part of the problem.
Honestly, Pierre is just so focused on following Trump's playbook. Like, it's not irresponsible to let them lead. And that's most of it. Not gonna lie.
Thank you so much. And who do you want to vote for in this election and why?
Carney. He's the only one that seems to actually understand what's going on, especially with the economy and what's going on there.
Inside the press room, squabbles between journalists led to a tense environment.
With nothing in front of you. Yes.
Every leadership debate, leaders come out one at a time after the debate and face an open question period with journalists. But this year, the session was cancelled. This was due to tensions arising backstage between journalists.
I can do the job of one of me can do the same job you clearly need five reporters to do. So am I the disgrace, or is it all of the people you needed to do the job I do by myself?
Most of the fighting started when reporters noticed Rebel News, a Canadian right-wing outlet, had five camera operators and five reporters present. Every other media outlet was told only send one reporter and one camera operator. But Rebel News was able to send multiple after threatening the debate commission with a lawsuit. Rather than removing the extra reporters, the debate commission canceled the open question period for all journalists, citing safety concerns for the party leaders. Here is the debate commission executive member, Michel Comier.
The press room will be open until 11, so you can finish filing. And I invite you to call the campaigns if you want any press availability.
In the end, no press was able to ask leaders questions. For CJLO News, I'm Aimide Ojo.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. Hope everyone's doing well. Finally, some good weather. Oh my God, that weekend was horrendous, raining 24/7. You just want to go out and do something? Nope. It was okay last night for the hockey game, but before that and Saturday, it was a disaster. And now on Monday, April the 28th, we've got a perfect day, not even a cloud in the sky. And man, I cannot wait for this show to be over. Sorry, so I can go outside and have some fun. But we had a hectic week in the world of sports. Unbelievable. The NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, the NFL draft last weekend, which we thought would be entertaining for one day just because of all the storylines. Then we had one of the great all-time falls, slips from an NFL player in Shedeur Sanders just waiting to be picked, and he ends up getting selected by the Browns in the fifth round. We'll get into that. We will also get into the Montreal Canadiens because that was a heartbreaking one last night. We'll break that one down. And Major League Baseball, I tell you what, it's really, really strange. Teams have started off hot, have cooled down, to the Toronto Blue Jays and others. And we'll get into that as well as we enter May for baseball season. Cannot wait for that. So why don't we start off with the Stanley Cup playoffs? Because we're in Montreal. The Canadiens were down 2-0. Okay, it's fine. They were playing the first-seeded team, the Washington Capitals, in first place. And they are a team that doesn't score a lot of goals, but man, do they just grind you down and cycle the puck. And they just have all these guys like McMichael and Dubois and just Strome and Ovechkin, guys who are just phenomenal with the puck. And they just love to run that cycle, and they were wearing Montreal down the first two games. But credit Montreal, on Friday, they responded. They got good goaltending. We'll talk about Montembeau and his health in a little bit. But they played great, and they came out, and in that second period and on, they dominated the Washington Capitals. They were the better team. Even the Capitals admitted it after the game that Montreal were the stronger squad. And you know what? It was the same story for a little bit yesterday. The first period, I thought Washington was the better team. But then that second period, Montreal came on. They killed that huge 5-on-3 penalty. Then they get the power play goal from Slafkovský on a great feed from Demidov. Then they get another power play on the Ovechkin hit at the end of the period. Caulfield scores, and they have all the momentum 2-1. Killed the 5-on-3, got the two power play goals to take the lead. And in the third period, it was going great. And then that series, and especially that game, changed when Tom Wilson just annihilated Carrier. And we can get into whether it's a clean hit or not. If you look at the timing, I think it was clean, but he did leave his feet a little bit, which makes it in a gray area. But it was one of the biggest hits I've seen. And Carrier was knocked out of the game, and they scored 10 seconds after that on a bouncing puck. And Washington just took the life out of the building, which was rocking for 2.5 periods. And they scored late on with Mangiapane to win the hockey game. Now, is Montreal dead? No, of course not. Is it ideal being down 3-1 and you have to win two road games in the process? No. But trust me, if Montreal just get game five, which they can because they've played with Washington. It's not like this has just been a lopsided series. People who didn't watch the game see the score 5-2. No, it was 2-2 until 3 minutes left, and then Mangiapane scores, and Washington get the two empty netters at the end of the game. Now, am I concerned about Montembeau? Yes. Dobesh made some big saves. It wasn't the reason why he lost. Montreal has a better chance if Montembeau's in net, I'm going to be honest with you. And I don't know what the hell's wrong with him. They're being really quiet about it. People are saying shoulder. We all saw him grab his hamstring. So I don't know the exact injury on Sam Montembeau, but it's not a good sight. But I will give Dobesh credit. The first goal was not a... that shouldn't happen. You got to cover the puck there. That was strange. Washington scores. Fair enough. But outside of that, he was making some big saves, made the big save on John Carlson on the power play. I thought Dobesh played pretty well. So let's see what happens. It's going to be interesting if Montembeau's healthy enough to go for Game 5. Did they play Montembeau? Or did Marty St. Louis see enough from Dobesh to say, you know what, with our season on the line, Jakub Dobesh can get us a win. So that's going to be an interesting storyline. What helps Montembeau is he'll get an extra day off. I don't think they play till Wednesday. So I think it's a travel day today, and then Game 5 will be Wednesday. But if you're Montreal, that's a tough one to lose, because you had the lead going into the third period. You played a pretty solid opening half of that period, and it's just that Tom Wilson hit, and he has been the focal point. If you ask me, every storyline, every scrum, Tom Wilson's behind it, which you would expect if you know how Tom Wilson plays. But he changed the series. And players like Tom Wilson, like Marchand back in the day, the list goes on and on. Milan Lucic, like guys like that, in the postseason, they have the ability to just change series. They do. They get under people's skin. They draw penalties. And sometimes they'll take a stupid penalty. But then in big spots, they hit. They get they grind. They're fan. Tom Wilson and guys like Marchand, Lucic back in the day are phenomenal, phenomenal playoff players. And that's what Tom Wilson is. And everyone who doesn't cheer for the Capitals hates Tom Wilson. But guess what? They would all take Tom Wilson on their hockey team in a second. He's decent offensively. He gets under people's skin. He hits. He backchecks. He forechecks. Tom Wilson's a phenomenal player. And yes, he has a bad rap around the league. He's been suspended I don't know how many times. But Tom Wilson, he really changed that game late in the third period. That hit on Carrier changed everything. It took the life out of the building. They scored right after, so the game was tied. And Washington had all the momentum. So that was a phenomenal hockey game. But let's see how Montreal responds. Because that was an emotional game. The crowd was unbelievable. It was an emotional two games. They get the first one and they let that last one slip. And now it's all about how will they respond on the road in Washington. And if I remember correctly, I was young back then. In 2010, when Halak and the Canadiens just stunned number one seeded Capitals, I think they were down 3-1 as well. So is this history rewriting itself? I don't know. But we shall see. We have to get into this Edmonton-LA series because this might be, apart from Game 2, the greatest series I've ever watched. And I know what you're thinking. It's recency bias. Just because you watched the games this past week, you think it's the greatest thing you've ever seen. But come on. This series has been unbelievable. It started off with LA looking like they were going to sweep the Oilers after the first two periods of Game 1. And McDavid and Draisaitl just drag Edmonton back. They were down, 3-0? Maybe even 4-0, I forget now. And then they were down 5-2 in the third period, and McDavid drags them back, ties at 5-5, only to give up a goal 20 seconds later and lose the game in regulation. So that game was unbelievable. Game 2 was all LA, but Game 3 was phenomenal. They were down and out. Edmonton was. Came back again, win the hockey game, score two quick goals, and they are horrendous on the road, I find, LA. So it was important that Edmonton won their games at home because the Kings, it's unbelievable. They either... let me rephrase this. They win at home, and then they always lose on the road. They, for some reason, the Kings just do not lose at home, and then they lose on the road. And they had two games here in Edmonton where if they get it, the series is over just because they do not lose at home. And they let it slip in both games. And yesterday might have been even worse because at least Edmonton came back with some time left. LA could make a push at the end of the game to try and tie. No. This game, they were 30 seconds away from losing. Edmonton was. And the Kings had a chance. Byfield had a chance to chip the puck out. Bouchard makes a phenomenal play to keep it in. He scores his second of the game, ties it with 30 seconds left. And then in overtime, that was one of the most one-sided overtimes I have ever seen. Edmonton were all over them. LA had a chance or two, but it was all Edmonton in that overtime. The LA was getting stuck in their zone, and Gavrikov takes the tripping penalty on McDavid, and that was the hockey game. But one player who we need to talk about, yes, McDavid, yes, Draisaitl, Evan Bouchard, but Corey Perry's playing unbelievable, and he's 39 years old. Corey Perry's been phenomenal. And what I really like about that line when they throw out McDavid, when they throw out Draisaitl and Corey Perry, is it just frees up Draisaitl and McDavid because Perry just kind of goes to the front of the net and he is so lethal with his hands in tight. The defender's got to watch him in the paint. So that gives McDavid and Draisaitl more space on the outside. And that has been working and it really worked in that overtime period. And if it wasn't for Darcy Kemper, the game would have been over maybe in regulation, and it would have been over in the first 2 minutes of overtime. Darcy Kemper was unbelievable. So if you're the Kings, as heartbreaking as those two losses were in Edmonton to go up 3-1, They can relax, I think, a bit. Because Darcy Kuemper can keep him in any game. He was phenomenal last night. But this tends to be a trend with the LA Kings in this series. They start off awesome, take that momentum into the second period, and then they got a lead going into the third, and they kind of fall back and defend a little bit, try not to lose instead of trying to win, and that allows McDavid and Drysdale just to control the puck, and you know what happens. But this is now three times in this series where they have a multi-goal lead in the third period, and they let it slip. And in game one, they were resilient, came back and scored right after with 20 seconds left. Fair enough. You got away with that one. But these two games in Edmonton, they should have won both those hockey games if they play the way they did in the first two periods. And I know it's McDavid and Draisaitl and Evan Bouchard and Nugent Hopkins and Evander Kane and all. I get it. But you're up two goals. Excuse me, you're up multiple goals. In game one, you let that slip away and you come back. Game three, you're up multiple goals, let that one slip away and you lose. And then yesterday, if Byfield gets the puck out, that's the game. And they're up 3-1 going home and they just have to win one more home game in the next two. Because game five's at home and game seven, if it gets there, would be at home. But now, it's 2-2, it's a best of three. And if you let the Oilers carry that momentum, if they start better in games, then you're in deep trouble. And I thought this was the Kings' year. I mean, how many times are you going to lose to the same team in the first round? And if you look coming into the postseason, the Oilers were not healthy at all. McDavid was missing time. Drysdale was missing time. The new guy they acquired, Trent Frederick, was missing time. They don't have Ekholm yet. So the Oilers were banged up. Really banged up. So if there was a year for the Kings to draw the Oilers and get past them, it was this year. And now they are in a best of three against McDavid and Drysdale and the Oilers, who just won two miraculous hockey games. If you have nothing to do Tuesday night and you don't mind staying up a bit late and you want to be entertained rather than watching a TV show or something, put this series on. Because it is unbelievable. It's one of the most exciting hockey series I've ever seen through four games. Game two was okay. It was just LA dominating. But games one, three, and four were just unbelievable. Truly unbelievable. We go through the rest of the series. We have a good one brewing between Winnipeg and St. Louis. The Blues, those two games at home, they took it to the Jets. They won 5-1 yesterday. And in game three, what was it, 7-2? So they had to respond at home, and boy, did they ever. And now the questions about Connor Hellebuck and his postseason play are really going to be amplified going into Game 5 on Wednesday, because he, as great as he is in the regular season, and he's going to get MVP he's going to get MVP chatter, and he's a lock to win the Vezina. If he keeps playing like this, the Jets are done. He played okay in Game 1. I thought he was very good in Game 2, but Games 3 and 4 on the road, he could not stop anything. So it's concerning for the Winnipeg Jets, because your best player is Connor Hellebuck. He might be the MVP of the league based on the regular season, and he's playing like that. So you're going to need some depth scoring. You're going to need Scheifele, Connor. You're going to need those guys to show up and play well. Because if your goalie, who's led you here, is not going to play like the regular season Hellebuck, then they're done. Then they're done. And St. Louis, that was a bad matchup for them anyway. St. Louis were the hottest team in the league coming into the playoffs. Jim Montgomery, what a job he's done. Unbelievable. And then another series which I've been loving is Colorado and Dallas. And Colorado's been the better team. They've led most of the series. And it's just Dallas, those two overtime games. They tie them late. They never really had a lead. And then they pull it out in overtime. And Drouin, man, he was responsible for those two overtime goals. We can say, oh, Drouin, he's playing better. He played better last night. Okay. But game two, he didn't pick up this man on the overtime winner. And then in game three at home, Brantanen bullies him off the puck. And then he's late to back check. But that's in the past. It's 2-2. It's a best of three, and if you ask me, the Western Conference is giving you some phenomenal series. Like, you think about the East. You have, oh, Carolina is up 3-1. Washington's up 3-1. The Leafs are up 3-1. We'll see what happens between Tampa and Florida tonight. But that has a chance to go up 3-1. The West, it's 2-2 between Winnipeg and St. Louis. 2-2 between Edmonton and L.A. It is 2-2 between the Blues and the and the Jets. And it's 2-2 between the Avalanche and the Stars. So there, it's just giving you unbelievable series. And then you have Minnesota and Vegas, which is 2-2. And that was an awesome hockey game as well. The West is an absolute just, I don't even know what to say, just an just such a stronger conference. It's the more dominant conference. You have better teams. Vegas would be the best team in the East. Winnipeg would be the best team in the East. Colorado, Dallas, LA, those would be the best teams in the East, in my opinion. They would, and that's nothing against Tampa, nothing against Florida, nothing against the Capitals, but if you ask me, those teams are all better than the teams in the East. And you're getting better series for it. Toronto's playing fantastic, and they could have closed that one out on Saturday. That was an unbelievable game for the Leafs. For some reason, couldn't close it out. On that, they had that four-minute power play, and I know Tavares got hurt earlier, so he couldn't be on that power play, and they're saying that affected it. Fair enough, but you had the Senators on the ropes with a shaky goaltender in Linus Ullmark, who honestly played okay Saturday, but you had a four-minute power play after a double double minor against Batherson, and they could not take advantage of it. They couldn't. So it's interesting. Ottawa gets that goal. Now they go back to Toronto, and that's tomorrow night, I believe, and it's going to be just an outrageous hockey game because Ottawa, if they get that one, they're what, going back home with a chance to send it to Game 7. And I have found, me personally, that Ottawa's been just as good as Toronto in some of those games. Not Game 4, and that's the one that Ottawa won, funny enough. But I thought in Game 2 and Game 3, which they lost in overtime, in the second half of those hockey games, Ottawa were the better hockey team. And in overtime, Ullmark was just so disappointing. So let's see if this fires them up a bit. And you know what the Leafs have to deal with in the media in Toronto, known as choke artists. If they get another one, if Ottawa gets Game 5 and they go back to Ottawa for Game 6 to send it to Game 7, and then, I know it's a crazy hypothetical because it's still two Ottawa wins away. But if the Senators get that done, imagine the pressure on the Leafs, who are up 3-0 going back home with a chance to be one of the great choke teams of all time. What do you think would be going through Matthews' head, Marner's head, Nylander's head? And what do you think all the Toronto media is going to be asking them? So that's why it's a big game, and I know it's a big game for Ottawa because if they lose it, they go home. But no one really expected the Senators to do anything. You draw Toronto, they're a much better team. It's a newer group. Now, there are the few Leafs haters who think that, oh, they just can't win a series, and fair enough. But Ottawa could be a few bounces away from being up 3-1. Those are two overtime games. And Stolarz made the unbelievable save on Cousins with a minute left in regulation in Game 2, or else Ottawa would have won that game. So this could be a different series. It could be 3-1 Ottawa, but no, they could have gone home in 4. But here they are. Down 3-1, and if they get Game 5 tomorrow, oh my. Oh my, because then all the pressure is going to be on Toronto. All the pressure. These playoffs have been unbelievable. The one series that I haven't been... No, I've been watching all the games, but the one series I kind of don't really care about, and I think I've said it multiple times on this program, is that Carolina-New Jersey series. It's like, can't really relate to either team. It's been good hockey, but Carolina's the much better team. Injuries have killed New Jersey. No Jack Hughes, they had no shot. But I still like the Devils as a team. I like Jesper Bratt. I like the younger Hughes guy. Dougie Hamilton, he's a Bruins legend. I still think he has a lot of good hockey left in the tank. And I think Markstrom's a good goalie. And Sheldon Keefe, it's a solid first year. So I'm not counting the Devils out. They're still alive, and you never know. They have They have their chances. If they can score, they have a good power play. But it's the injuries just killed them. Injuries have killed them. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a bit about the NBA postseason and that unbelievable NFL draft over the weekend. That was something else. We all thought Shedeur Sanders was at worst going to go in the 20s to the Pittsburgh Steelers. He ends up falling and sliding to the 5th round. So I'll give some quick draft grades on teams' first picks, and I will give my thoughts on Shedeur Sanders falling to the Browns in round 5. My name's Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Festival Bleu Bleu, presented by SiriusXM, is back for its 7th edition. From June 20th to 23rd, Carlton-sur-Mer will come alive with performances by Ariane Roy, Petit Beliveau, Clopel Gag, High Classified, Uri, Gus Engelhorn, Belly, Maggie Merlin, and many more. Don't miss the epic Beach Electro Night, the Artisan Market, the classic Mussels and Fries Dinner, the Water Skipping Tournament, and plenty other fun activities. Contact your friends and plan your Gaspésie getaway. Tickets and details at festivalbleubleu.com.
Join us Tuesday nights at midnight on CJLO for Floydian Slip, an hour of Pink Floyd. Hey, I'm Craig Bailey, your host for an hour of Pink Floyd, Floydian Slip, Tuesday nights at midnight right here on 1690 AM, CJLO.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. So yeah, the NBA playoffs are going on as well. I've been so hyped up by the NHL and what's going on there, especially in this city. It's hard not to just block out what's going on in the NBA. But I've been tracking it, watching the Celtics game. That was a big win for them over the weekend. They have a 3-1 series lead over the Orlando Magic. The Heat looking to finish off the Cavaliers looking to finish off the Miami Heat. And I think we all knew that was going to happen. Boston and Cleveland, the entire year, were the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. So let's see what happens. The Knicks getting a monster performance from Towns late in the basketball game to take a 3-1 series lead over the Pistons. And we're right now heading for a collision course between Boston and New York in the second round, which will be unbelievable. Unbelievable. I cannot wait for that. But again, the Pistons aren't dead, but in the NBA, if you fall down 3-1, 3-0, it doesn't look good. It hardly ever happens. The Lakers really letting that one yesterday get away from them. 116-113, they fall to the Timberwolves, and now they are down 3-1. LeBron, I mean, he was great to start the game. Then at the end, I don't know if he scored in the fourth quarter. It was a weird basketball game, and Minnesota 3-1 lead, and people keep forgetting Minnesota were in the Western Conference Finals a year ago. Not like they're a bad team. They were playing Dallas a year ago in the Western Conference Finals. So Minnesota's got some good players. Obviously, they made the big trade in the offseason, letting Cat go. They brought in Randall, who's really helped them. They brought in DiVincenzo. They brought in other pieces. But that Anthony Edwards is just such a fun player to watch. He dropped 43 yesterday. 43-9-6. Unbelievable. Luka was fantastic as well. 38 points for the Lakers. But we'll see. Their backs are against the wall. And I know I hate the Lakers and I want them to lose all the time as a Celtics fan. But I wouldn't mind watching LeBron and Luka a bit more. So I hope they pick up one or two more down the way. The Milwaukee Bucks, they are in a deep, deep hole. They are down 3-1 to the Indiana Pacers, and they play tomorrow night. The Pacers looking to end Milwaukee. Giannis, he's playing well. He's throwing up 28 points, 15 rebounds. But Damian Lillard left the game last game. So we'll see if his availability for game five. And if you look at Tyrese Haliburton, 15 assists. 15 assists. He just loves to share the rock. He gets people open, finds them at the right spots. And Indiana, again, I feel like Minnesota and Indiana, we forget that those teams were in the conference finals a year ago. And they're going to have their hands full with the Cavs, who look to finish off Miami this week. But those, the East, those are two really fun series. Indiana and Cleveland, Boston, New York. That's great for the NBA. That is really good for the NBA. We head to the Western Conference again with Golden State. Curry putting on a clinic in Game 3 to give the Warriors a 2-1 series lead. He was unbelievable. 36-9-7 for him. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because if Golden State get through Houston, people got to remember, Houston's the number 2 seed in the Western Conference. You know, it's not just, okay, it's the Rockets, their young team. They were the number 2 seed in the West. If Golden State gets through them, they can easily make the finals. And I know OKC's there and Minnesota looks tough. All right, I understand it. And the Clippers and Denver are in an all-time series. Okay, but if they get through Houston, you don't think that's going to give Steph and all those guys confidence? And they've been there before. OKC haven't. I know Kawhi Leonard's won a championship, but James Harden hasn't. We just raved about Minnesota. They haven't won a championship. So trust me, the experience is on the side of the Golden State Warriors. So they can win and go up 3-1 tonight and finish off the Rockets. That would be unbelievable for Golden State, because this was a tough matchup for them to get through the number 2 seed. And then you have the Lakers losing, and then either Jokic and the Nuggets are gone, or Kawhi and the Clippers are gone. It opens up in the West for Golden State. It really does. That Clippers-Nuggets series has been unbelievable. Unbelievable. So the NFL draft was over the weekend. In fact, it was Thursday through Saturday. And we all knew Cam Ward was going number one. That was a given. Cam Ward to Tennessee, he was the number one overall pick. There was no point in even discussing it. Then we had the idea of, oh, well, it's Hunter, Carter, they're going 2-3, Giants, Browns, they're going to take one of them. But credit the Jacksonville Jaguars for moving up from 5-2 to get Travis Hunter. And a lot of people didn't understand the trade, because the one thing people knew about this draft was that it wasn't a strong one. And that next year's draft is the draft. That's when you're going to have the good quarterbacks, better receiver talent, all those things. But the Jacksonville Jaguars said, hey, Travis Hunter is a game changer. Where would Travis Hunter go in next year's draft? He would be a top 5 pick again. And they need help at the skill position spot, at wide receiver. Brian Thomas Jr. is fantastic. But look, Gabe Davis hasn't been who he thought they would be. They lose Christian Kirk. They need some more players on the perimeter. And they go get the Heisman Trophy winner in Travis Hunter, who can also help them on defense. And it's a young new GM. It's a young new head coach. They want to rebuild the culture here in Jacksonville. So why not pick the biggest star in the draft, the biggest star in college football, the Heisman Trophy winner, who wants to play both ways? And he even said in interviews, "The only thing I do is play football, study football, and fish. I'm all about football." And that's the culture they want to bring to Jacksonville. And people are freaking out. Oh, my God, they gave a second pick. Next year's one. If Travis Hunter is going to change your football team and change the identity of your football team, then it's worth it. It's absolutely worth it. Do I understand it from the Browns' perspective? Sure, you get more draft picks. And you have holes on your roster, and you get next year's one, and you got a 2 in the second round, and you drafted good players in the second round. Okay, fair enough. But if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars, and you're this young regime who wants to change the woeful play that's been in Jacksonville, then I like the move. They were aggressive. They knew what they wanted to do. They saw the player that they wanted. and they went and got him. And you got to give him credit for that. And was the young, what's the kid's name? Gladstone? He's from that Rams culture where they say, the hell with them picks. We want the best player available. We want the player that can change our team. And Travis Hunter will absolutely do wonders for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Him as a number two wide receiver to Brian Thomas Jr., that will help Trevor Lawrence out so much. And Liam Cohen was brought in to help fix Trevor Lawrence because he still has all the talent in the world. He just hasn't had anything around him, and he's been banged up with injuries. But let's be honest. This is all about helping Trevor Lawrence become the quarterback everyone thought he would be when he came out of Clemson. That's what it is. And Liam Cohen's a hell of a coach. Look what he did with Baker Mayfield last year. And Trevor Lawrence, nothing against Baker Mayfield, has far more talent. Far more. Now he has a legit number one. Probably has two number ones. Brian Thomas and Travis Hunter. That's going to be must-see TV next year in the NFL. I'm telling you. And if they need some help in the secondary as well, Travis Hunter can play some snaps at corner. He can play your nickel corner. He can play your outside corner. He can do whatever. Here was Jaguars' young general manager. He looks like he's like 15 years old. talking about why they moved up to get Travis Hunter. And boy, when he made his statement, I was sold.
Jacksonville Jaguar, and really what comes to mind for me, right, thinking about the sport of football and really the power of the game itself, right? Its capacity to ignite belief, right? Belief in ourselves, belief in others, right? Belief in achieving what many may deem impossible. Travis Hunter, he embodies belief, right? He's a rare person. He's a rare player. But he's also a reminder that the boundaries of the game of football were built to be challenged. And so the decision to select him was actually a statement for how we plan to move, who we are, and we want him to be nothing more than him. Because when he is, he elevates the space around him, from the football field to the city, to the game of football itself. Travis Hunter is who we've been hunting up. Couldn't be more jacked to be sitting right here beside him and introduce you all to the man of the hour.
So that was a hell of an introduction. And to Travis Hunter's credit, he has said from day one, hey, I want to play both ways in the National Football League. Is that a lofty goal? Is that attainable just because, A, the NFL is not college football, and B, because these guys are different at the NFL level, and another thing, it's never been done before. So you have all these things. Sure, you can do it, and people do it in high school. A few have done it in college, not to the level Travis Hunter did, maybe Charles Woodson. And it's the National Football League, and it's never been done at that level. But credit Travis Hunter. He says, I'm going to try and do it. I'm going to work my tail off to do it. And the Jacksonville Jaguars saw it. They respected it. And it's going to instill belief in that locker room. And it'll get people jacked up to play football there. And you got to respect it. Will it work for them? I don't know. But I people who are coming after the Jacksonville Jaguars, hey, the Jaguars have been worthless for the last 15 years, apart from the two runs they made? The one with Blake Bortles just because they had an all-time defense, and then the one a few years ago when they were down 27-0 against the Chargers in the wild card round when they won the worst division of all time? Outside of that, the Jaguars have been a mess. So trust me, that Travis Hunter will change the culture there in Jacksonville. He will. I just know it. The other big storyline, we had Abdul Carter go to the Giants, and everyone thought, okay, they're going to roll with Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston. Then they trade back into the first round for the quarterback. And we heard murmurs about it. We heard, oh, they liked a few of the quarterbacks as well. What I heard was that Joe Shane liked Shedeur Sanders and Brian Daboll loved Jackson Dart. and they end up taking Jackson Dart at 25. They trade back in with Houston, and yeah, they go get Jackson Dart. And I don't want to judge anyone because we really don't know. People who are saying, oh, they know if quarterbacks are going to succeed, they really don't know. No one knows. But I saw Jackson Dart at Ole Miss. And yes, I saw him making some plays with his legs. He's a bigger guy. Can make all the throws. Okay, I understand that. But I watched him all year last year. Because going into the year, I had to hear Ole Miss are making the playoff. Lane Kiffin's invested in the team. The boosters, with all this NIL money, have built an unbelievable football team. And I watched. I watched a ton of Ole Miss. I saw him as a huge favorite play awful against Kentucky. I saw him against Georgia. Yeah, they won the game. He was not that good in that game. And then I saw him against Florida. Oh my. He threw like three picks right away at the end of the game. He was awful in that Florida game. He cost them the Florida game. They should have beat Florida. And this is not the Tim Tebow, Urban Meyer Florida Gators. This is a Florida Gators team that was horrendous to start the year. And yeah, they picked it up later on because of DJ Lagway. But come on. He was nowhere near as good as Shedeur Sanders in college. Nowhere near. Tom, he played in the SEC. Okay, that means he has SEC talent around him. He's the SEC offensive line. He has an SEC run game. Sure, yes, he had Shedeur Sanders had Travis Hunter. Fair enough. And other decent receivers. But they had one of the worst offensive lines in the country. They did. Ole Miss were unbelievable last year on paper. They had a good offensive line, good running game. The Harris kid they draft that was just drafted in the first two rounds. Lane Kiffin, who's one of the great offensive minds in college football and likes to give his quarterback easy completions. Jackson Dart was still not who I thought, not a first round pick in my opinion. He played awful against Florida, played awful against Kentucky. He wasn't that good in the LSU game they lost. I've never really been impressed with Jackson Dart, especially this year. 2 years ago, I said, oh, he's going to have a big jump from year for next year. Okay, I waited for it. A first round pick? And I trust Brian Daboll. He's a quarterback guru. He even made Daniel Jones look competent, and he got a $160 million contract. So I have faith in Brian Daboll to work with Jackson Dart and make him better than he actually is. But I just don't know. The sample size isn't there. I said the same thing about Zach Wilson. I said the same thing about Trey Lance. So the same thing about all those guys. I in big spots, and when I watched them, I wasn't blown away. People look at the physical tools or the pro days and stuff like that and think, oh, you see the arm, you see this throw, you see that throw. No, I watched the games. And when I watched the games, Shedeur Sanders was miles better than Jackson Dart. And it could be that Shedeur Sanders had the worst draft process of all time, and I wouldn't disagree. His interviews were reportedly horrible. He wanted to go to certain places. He was acting like he was Eli Manning, deciding where he wanted to go. Didn't want to play here. Didn't want to play here. Fair enough. But if you actually watch the games, Shedeur Sanders was better than Jackson Dart. He was. Tom, it doesn't have the physical makeup of Jackson Dart. Okay, but when I watched Colorado and when I watched Ole Miss, I thought Shedeur was better. That's just me. And I could be wrong. At least he played at a bigger school. Like Trey Lance with North Dakota State. I'm not knocking BYU, but the year that Zach Wilson was drafted where he was, in 2021, it was the COVID year. They played nobodies. And the one time they played a good school was Coastal Carolina, and he was awful. But just because he made the greatest throw in the history of the pro day, rolling left, flicking his wrist, and it going 60 yards the other way, the Jets make him number two overall pick. And that's why Robert Saleh and Douglas aren't there anymore. But boy, I just didn't see it coming. And when I heard the reports of Jackson Dart, I'm like, oh, okay. But I was stunned. Stunned. So now we'll get into Shedeur Sanders. So Shedeur, did I think he was going to go number one or top five? No, I didn't. I thought Shedeur was probably either going to go nine to New Orleans because they need a quarterback, or he's going to be there for the Steelers at 21, which is a huge slide for a guy who was a month ago going to be the second pick in the draft, the third pick in the draft. Like, that's where Shedeur Sanders was projected on going. He ends up sliding all the way down to the fifth round to the Cleveland Browns after the Browns already picked a quarterback. The Browns already picked the quarterback. They picked Dillon Gabriel in the third round. Then they take Shedeur Sanders at 144. And I know what people are thinking. What the hell are the Browns doing? The Browns want two kicks at this can. The Deshaun Watson situation was a disaster. They traded boatload of picks, gave him the largest guaranteed contract in the history of the sport. They were all in on Deshaun Watson and were out on Baker Mayfield. And since then, Baker Mayfield went on to make multiple Pro Bowls, and Deshaun Watson has been the biggest disaster in the history of the National Football League. And for some reason, the Browns have never seemed to get it right at quarterback. And the one time they did, for a brief period, they traded him away because he had, what, one down year? Are you serious? So the Browns were in an awful situation. They had Dorian Thompson-Robinson for a bit. And now, during this process, Deshaun Watson re-tears his Achilles. So he's out for the year. Now you have Kenny Pickett, Joe Flacco, now, and then the two rookies. So I don't blame them for taking two quarterbacks. They're like, hey, let's just try and take quarterbacks until we get it right. And there is a very strong possibility that Shedeur Sanders starts for the Browns this year. Not saying week one, but I'm saying, listen, look at that quarterback room. Kenny Pickett is a backup. I know he's a former first-round pick. He is not a starter in the NFL. He is a backup. Dillon Gabriel, I don't know one scout who had Dillon Gabriel as a better prospect than Shedeur Sanders. And it's nothing against Dillon Gabriel. He was on the number one team in the country for a large part of this year in Oregon. He was awesome at UCF. He was awesome at Oklahoma. Okay, yes, Dillon Gabriel is a good quarterback for college. I don't think he has the size. I don't think he has the arm strength. Shedeur Sanders has a great chance to be a starter. And trust me, he sounded ticked off. He said, I'm done with rapping. I'm focusing on football. I want to prove all these people wrong. And you know what? Maybe Shedeur sliding in the draft was the best thing for him in the long run. And let's not act like the Browns don't have some players. The Browns got some players. Jerry Jeudy's still there. They have Njoku. They picked the kid Fannin from Bowling Green in the draft. I think they picked Judkins, the running back from Ohio State. I think Elijah Moore's still there, right? So they have pieces. And Kevin Stefanski's offense is very similar to the Pat Shurmur's offense. I think they overlapped a bit in the NFL. Pat Shurmur was the OC at Colorado. So all these things start to add up. And you know what? The more I think about it, Shedeur can be okay. He might be fine. And if this allows Shedeur Sanders to reach his true potential, then the Browns are laughing. Because the Browns, it felt like, had a million picks in this draft, and they kept passing on. Kept passing on him. Kept passing on him. Kept passing on him. And eventually, at pick 144, they're like, this is getting out of hand. This guy was possibly going to go in the first round. Possibly go in the top five. A month ago, before his interviews, was going to be a top three pick. So he sat, and he sat, and he sat. And by the end, and his brother or someone was doing the stream, like a Twitch stream or something, said, hey, like, Shedeur said, I'll go anywhere. I just want to play ball. And he looked focused, hungry, determined. And then not to mention, he had all these kids prank calling him, saying they're drafted. And we found out it was Jeff Ulbridge, the DC for the Falcons' son, who got his number and prank called him. It was a terrible weekend for Shedeur Sanders and the Sanders family. I mean, they were happy that Travis Hunter went second overall, but it was not a good weekend. But it might be better for him because he was cocky. He was arrogant. He was all those things. But now that he's here in Cleveland, a good situation, a good head coach, he was humbled. Now he has a QB competition with a fellow quarterback from his draft class who was taken ahead of him. This could be the best thing ever for Shedeur Sanders when we look back at it. Now, I've been saying all along, do I think Shedeur Sanders is going to be a top five quarterback in the NFL? No. But I said, why can't he be a competent starter in the league? He's accurate. He doesn't get flustered. He was behind one of the worst offensive lines I've ever seen in college. And he's not afraid of the limelight. He's been in it for a long time. So who knows? This could maybe be the greatest thing ever for the Cleveland Browns. But if Shedeur doesn't work out, who cares? It's a fifth-round draft pick. And they got Mason Graham in the draft to go along with Myles Garrett, and they picked a linebacker from UCLA, Harold Fannin, the tight end. The Browns had a very nice draft. And I know they could have had Travis Hunter, but they got that second-round pick, and they got the first next year, which I think is worth it for the Jags. But for the Browns, you're just acquiring assets, and now you could possibly have your quarterback of the future who you took in the fifth round. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll give you my quick thoughts on who I think won the NFL draft and preview some of the Stanley Cup playoffs for this week. My name is Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
This is a public service announcement with guitar.
Are you?
This is a public service announcement with guitar.
Are you following the Canadian election? Where do you plan on getting the results on election night? How about CJLO's live election night broadcast? We'll be broadcasting live on April 28th from 6 p.m. until the election is called. As results roll in, we'll be having honest conversations with community members, activists, experts, and journalists about election issues that matter to you, CJLO listeners, complete with a call-in section and some election-themed tunes. That's April 28th from 6 p.m. until the election is called. Over 5 hours of straight, live, trustworthy, grassroots election coverage.
Hey man, what are you listening to? Is this Weezer? Are you really listening to Weezer right now? It's 2021, bro. Pull up to the castle every Friday at 1, only on CJLO 1690. It's good, I swear.
Back here in the Tommy John Show. So this has been a crazy, crazy week in sports. Crazy. So the teams I thought that had a good draft. I'm not trying to be a homer. I thought the Patriots had a great draft. They dressed the left tackle spot. And I know. Will Campbell has short arms. We get it. But his run blocking ability, and he only allowed 2 sacks in the SEC. And he started all 3 years at LSU. So the Patriots had to do it. They have to help Drake May out. Then you look at later on in the draft, they get Travion Henderson, who's one of the best running backs on the board from Ohio State. They get the kid from Washington State, the receiver Williams. He's flew off my screen when I watched him, Kyle Williams. So that's a very good draft. And they got the center from Georgia. The Patriots had a good draft. They're sold. They invested in defense in the offseason. They paid more money than anyone. They got Milton Williams on a $100 million contract. They got Harold Landry, Robert Spillane, Carlton Davis. The list goes on and on of the guys the Patriots brought in on defense. They had to help Drake May. And yes, they got Diggs. And what? Okay. They got Morgan Moses. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. That's a good right tackle. Now they have their left tackle sorted out. They can move Mike Owenu, who's really a guard, fully at right guard. They got the center from Georgia now in the draft. They also signed the, forgetting his name, the guy from Minnesota, also play center. So they have center competition. The one area that's a bit strange is left guard, but they have Layden Robinson from last year. Let's see if Cole Strange actually is healthy. Belichick's masterpiece. Remember that? Cole Strange from UT Chattanooga. So maybe he actually plays. Maybe he plays center, and they, who knows? But this offensive line now with Morgan Moses and Will Campbell at the tackles is miles better than last year. Miles. And the running back room, Travion Henderson's a good running back. And you add him to Antonio Gibson and Ramondre Stevenson, that's a decent running back room. Then you have Hunter Henry and Austin Hooper, who were the lone bright spots on the offense pretty much last year. And now you add Williams to a room that has Pop Douglas, that has Kayshon Booty, that has Stephon Diggs, that has Kendrick Bourne, not to mention the two rookies from last year, Polk and Baker. Let's see, this is going to be a much better football team. And Mike Vrabel is a culture guy, and he said he was going to bring guys in who fit the culture, who just want to play football. And to his credit, man, the Will Campbell, that is a Mike Vrabel pick. That is a Mike Vrabel pick. So I think the Patriots had a good draft. I think the Raiders had a pretty good draft. I thought they had a really good draft. I thought the Chargers had a good draft. You get O'Marrion Hampton, so they bring in Najee Harris, and everyone thought they'd take a receiver in the first round. They go O'Marrion Hampton from North Carolina to give him a 1-2 punch at the running back spot. Then they go get Trey Harris in the second round, who is one of the higher wide receivers graded this year. So they address that wide receiver spot in the second round. So I thought the Chargers had a really good draft. You obviously have to say the Jacksonville Jaguars getting Travis Hunter, that's a very good draft. Another team that I think had a really good draft, the Houston Texans. We talk about the Houston Texans. So they lose Tunzel. They lose Shaq Mason on the offensive line. They go get Ursary from Minnesota, who was one of the better tackles in the draft. Then that wide receiver core, which is now depleted, they lose Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell's probably out for the foreseeable future. It's just Nico Collins there. So what do? They go get the Iowa State teammates, who are phenomenal together at Iowa State. So that was a really good draft. I like what the Bears did. They're just trying to help Caleb Williams in every way they can. They went and got Colston Loveland, the tight end from Michigan, 10th overall. Then Luther Burden III falls to them at 39. The last piece, I believe, of the Bryce Young trade. Luther Burden III. So now that Keenan Allen's gone. So now their three main wide receivers are going to be Rome Odunze, DJ Moore, Luther Burden III. They're going to have Cole Kmet, Colston Loveland as the tight ends. Good Lord. And you still have DeAndre Swift in the backfield, not to mention you added all those pieces up front on the offensive line through free agency and trading and acquiring Joe Tooney. There's no excuses now for Caleb Williams. You got Ben Johnson, who's one of the great offensive minds in recent times. And you have just an outrageous amount of weapons. A year ago, Luther Burden was a potential top 10 pick. Had a down year, and that Missouri offense was just awful. He falls to the second round, and the Bears are there to snag him. So I like that pickup. There has been reports of character issues, but we're talking about the player, the player, Luther Burden III. They got a steal there in the second round. Another team, and I hate to say it, the Baltimore Ravens. Oh my God, they stay where they are. They don't do the trade up nonsense. They're kind of like the Eagles in that way. If there's a player they really like, they'll move up one spot, but they're not going to jump up the entire draft board. The Baltimore Ravens just stayed where they were, needed help in the secondary, and get Malachi Starks from Georgia. So now that secondary is going to have Humphrey, Kyle Hamilton, Malachi Starks, my goodness. And then they get Mike Green on day two. And Mike Green was projected to be a first-round pick. He led college football in sacks last year. He had 17 sacks at Marshall. 17. Crazy. So those are my quick winners for the draft. We're back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern on CJLO, 1690 a.m. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll speak to you all next week.